This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. So stigmas may prevent some from seeking the mental health care they need today. But in the past, another reason was lack of access. Mental health care wasn't even considered a necessity until the Affordable Care Act required insurers to provide this coverage. Since 2008, it's been illegal to charge patients extra for mental health services, something that insurance companies used to do in the past. But even with these laws being put into place, does it necessarily mean that more Black Americans are seeking treatment? KLW's Lila Day talks with local psychiatrist Dr. Loma Flowers.
There's a lot of opinions about why there aren't more African Americans seeking therapy.
Yes.
Some argue that it's stigmatized. Some argue that there's been a major healthcare disparity because of insurance issues. Why do you think there aren't more African Americans seeking mental health care?
I think that both of those are valid reasons. I think there's no question that they operate. Access to care, definitely. Stigma for mental health in general applies to a lot of cultures, including our culture. So I think it scares people. They don't understand it, and it's frightening. So people often, when there's something happens they don't understand and they're frightened, they attack it and, you know, throw people into dungeons, all the rest of it. So I think that's the stigma. If you had a mental illness, it used to be a dangerous business for you to even survive. Right. And for your family would get contaminated by you. So I think that's where some of the secrecy and the hiding came from.
I wanted to talk a little bit more about this feeling of not having any weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think the root of that comes from?
African-Americans have had a very difficult time in the United States in general. And vulnerability was very dangerous. Any kind of vulnerability in mental health would get swept into that vulnerability, that you had to take care of it within the family. A, there were no resources, and any resource you might seek would just make you more vulnerable to attack. So I think that's partly where it came from, that you had to feel safe. On the other level, I think African Americans have been tough and strong and managed their own play, as they say, and not relied on anybody or felt the safety to be vulnerable. Doing therapy requires you to have a certain vulnerability to your therapist, and you have to trust them. And the health system had not had a very good reputation of being good to African Americans. If you think of the Tuskegee study and other things, those kinds of things damage the relationship for years, decades, and it's hard for people to get over that fear, which is one of the reasons why it's important to have therapists available from your own culture, though some people prefer not to have someone from their own culture. They want someone that they'll never run into at the grocery store or at a party.
Mm-hmm.
There's other reasons, individual reasons, that I think, again, within the culture, that African Americans were expected to be strong. When I first went to Stanford and there was a health center in East Palo Alto, there was an expectation that African Americans didn't need mental health care, that
Why?
They were strong families and they handled all their own problems. Well, one way, it's an easy way to not provide the service is if you decide nobody needs it, then there's no reason why you should provide them the service.
The care that you get is limited based on what type of insurance you have, right?
Yes, that's right.
So not everyone is going to be able to sit down and afford it and have
right.
that one-on-one interaction with a therapist, specifically Black communities.
Well, it's a huge problem. That's healthcare disparities in a nutshell,
mm-hmm.
That it isn't available to everybody, regardless of their income. But, I mean, that's the new healthcare, the Affordable Care Act was designed to address exactly this issue and provide more care for everybody. There's a new push for health equity. Mental health has always been a second-class citizen, along with the physical health. If you break your bones, emergency rooms have to take you. If you're suicidal, they'll take you. But the minute you're not suicidal, out the door, which is ridiculous because you have to understand why the suicidal thoughts came. Once you get people off the edge, off the cliff edge, that's important, but it's not the end. That's the beginning of what got them to the cliff edge in the first place. But we will see what happens.
We'll see. There's still a lot of problems with this. For example,
Absolutely.
If you don't have health insurance or have a very basic level of health insurance, the type of therapy that you're guided to go to is more of a group therapy.
Frequently, because it's less expensive, because you can treat, you know, 8 people at the same time. Group therapy has a bad reputation because of that, but from my point of view, group therapy can be fantastic. I love group therapy. I did it in my private practice, and I found it the best treatment for people if you have any kind of problem with relationships.
a lot of people just associate group therapy as a lesser than type of therapy.
That's right.
And specifically when you see, you know, when you have that option to sit on the chaise lounge and talk one-on-one with someone versus go into a group at a medical center,
right.
There's a disconnect with the
Absolutely.
Attention that you're getting.
That's right. It feels better. You know, in group feels like you have to share with your siblings. You really don't know who you are, and you really need a lot of internal work just about you, then the individual therapy is invaluable. But if it's anything to do with relationships, family relationships, lovers, husbands, spouses, work, any of that, group therapy, well done, is fabulous.
That's Dr. Loma Flowers. She's a clinical professor of psychiatry at UCSF and the president of Equilibrium Dynamics. What are some of the things that have stood out for you as you've been practicing for well over 40 years, right?
Yes, that's right.
What are some of the things that you have noticed specifically that is, you know, related to the Black community when we're talking about mental health care?
Well, there's a number of different levels of issues. If you just start with the African-American individual, when I started practice, therapy wasn't often available to African-Americans in the normal mainstream of everyday life. It was unusual. You had to be severely ill to even think about doing therapy. When I finished my training, or a little after, there were 77 Black women psychiatrists in the United States, which
wow.
means there's not that much access to people that you might feel comfortable, particularly in a venue of therapy, which you didn't even know what it was about.
Do you think it is more advantageous to have a therapist that maybe shares your same ethnic background?
I think in general, it's really advantageous to have that kind of a therapist available if you want them. But everybody doesn't want it. I would say majority of people like it. But I think there is a minority who prefer somebody very different, and as I said, who has no overlap with their life.
Over the past 40 years or so, have you seen an increase in a certain diagnosis of certain mental health care issues, or a decrease in certain areas within the Black community?
I hadn't thought about it that way, but my colleagues who work at the universities see a much higher incidence of mental illness at the university than was in my day. But there seems to be a much higher use of the counseling centers, much higher use of antidepressants, more of an alienation and a disconnection, the kind of stuff that leads to depression or is a symptom of depression, both. You know, it's one of those downward spirals that they kind of feed on each other. The more alienated you are, the more you isolate yourself, and therefore the more alienated you become, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think there's more of that happening. I think the social media is the biggest difference I see, that people don't connect emotionally the way they used to connect, that they connect with a distance. And to me, and I may be proven wrong or may be proven right, it doesn't really matter, but it's there's less of an emotional connection between person to person, like you and I are sitting just talking with each other person to person. There's less of that happens. There's much more that happens mm-hmm. by remote. And it looks the same, it sounds the same, but it's not quite the same.
If you could give advice to a recently graduated psychiatrist mm-hmm. who's going into the field to work with a Black population, what advice would you give them? Like if I'm that
yes.
person,
yes,
what
right.
would you tell me?
I would say be open to what your patients tell you. That your patients are your best source of any information about them, about their community, and what their needs are. So listen. Ask good questions, and for goodness sake, listen to the answers.